Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. This is our bicentennial year, a time to pause and count our blessings. And among the greatest of these are the men and women of letters who flourished in our native land, who created a literature that was both typically American and universally admired. After all, it was our own Edgar Allan Poe who invented the kind of stories you hear on this program, and our own Mark Twain who carried them to the most sublime heights of fantasy and fun. At this time, we propose to give you an exhilarating taste of one of the most exciting stories of fantasy, mystery, and suspense the world has ever known. Our mystery drama, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, was adapted from the Mark Twain classic, especially for the Mystery Theater, by Sam Dan, and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Luden's Medicated Cough Drops. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Right now, True Value Hardware Stores offer you what's missing from almost everybody's life at this time of year: sunlight and warmth. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you they offer a General Electric Sun Lamp Kit and a Titan Radiant Heater. The GE Sun Lamp is for fun and relaxation. Its ultraviolet light gives you a healthy, natural tan, even now when it's too cold for most of us to sit out in the sun. Get the lamp, a clamp-on holder, and a safety guard, and a sun worshiper's guide, all for just $13.77. And True Value Hardware Stores offer the Titan Radiant Heater for warmth. It's designed for use in barns, garages, and chilly basement workshops, so you can work in comfort, even in the cold. It gives you two fan-forced heat ranges controlled by an automatic thermostat. It's portable, and you can mount it overhead, too, out of the way. It's just $19.88. The GE Sun Lamp Kit and the Titan Radiant Heater. Sunlight and warmth from your participating True Value Hardware store. And you can charge it on Master Charge at many stores.
If you saw 10 members of the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, 8 of us would be women, a lot of us supporting families. We'd have a pretty hard time on our own, but with the union, we can live decent lives and pay our own way. The ILG has been working for the working woman for 75 years. That's my union, and that's what our label stands for.
Look for the union label when you are buying a coat, dress, or blouse. Remember somewhere our union's sewing, our wage is going to feed the kids and run the house. We work hard, but who's complaining? Thank you.
Here's something to cheer about. It's the great value you get at Cheers Steakhouse. Right now, Cheers is featuring a plank sliced steak dinner for two. For $6.95, you get all this: French onion soup topped with toasted bread and melted imported cheese, unlimited quantities of Cheers' famous salad and delicious house dressing, the highest quality plank sliced steak served with Duchess potatoes, garden fresh vegetables, grilled tomato, and crispy onion rings. For dessert, make your own ice cream sundae or experience Cheers' homemade cheesecake. Linger over coffee and sip an after-dinner cordial in a delicious Swiss chocolate cup. Complimentary champagne is all part of Cheers' hospitality. You get all this for only $6.95. Other entrees reasonably priced. Cheers Steakhouse has a 20-year reputation for superb food. Dress is casual and parking is free after 5 p.m. Cheers Steakhouse, 120 West 41st Street. For reservations, call 244-8810.
Mark Twain begins his story with these words: "It was in Warwick Castle that I came across a curious stranger. He attracted me by his candid simplicity, his marvelous familiarity with ancient armor, and the restfulness of his company."
I thought I would tell you my story, but I've kept a journal. Oh, how long ago that was. Do you know about transmigration of souls? Do you know about transposition of eras and bodies? Ah, well, read and learn. He was gone.
I examined the sheaf of papers he had left with me. Most of it was parchment, yellow with age. Old, old, incredibly old. Carefully, as I feared they would crumble within my fingers, I began to turn the pages. And now begins the stranger's story.
I'm an American. Born and reared in Hartford in the state of Connecticut. A Yankee of the Yankees. My father was a blacksmith. My uncle was a horse doctor. And I was both at first. Then I went over to the great arms factory and I learned how to make everything. Guns, boilers, engine, just about any and every kind of machinery you can imagine. I had a couple of thousand men working for me, but although they were under my jurisdiction, they refused to be under my thumb. You there! Shut that machine down.
Who says so?
I say so.
Well, who do you think you are?
I'm the boss.
Well, why didn't you go soak your head?
I'm giving you an order.
I don't take orders from you.
How about this kind of an order?
Ow.
Now, shut that machine down. Well, you see, you couldn't explain to him he was doing the wrong thing and wasting company time and material. So I had to develop other methods of communication. Well, that worked out pretty good for a while. But as the good book says, he who lives by the fist. We had a big, sulky fella named, aptly enough, Hercules. A surly brute he was. Everybody left him strictly alone. I should have left him alone, too, but I had to prove who was boss.
Oh, he laid me out with a crusher alongside the head that made everything inside crack. It seemed to spring every joint in my skull. And then suddenly the world went out in darkness.
When I came to, I was sitting under an oak in the midst of a broad and beautiful country landscape. And there was a fellow on a horse looking down at me. A fellow fresh out of a picture book. In old-time armor from head to heel, with a sword and a shield and a prodigious spear. His horse had armor on, too, with red and green trappings that hung all around him. Oh, it was all gorgeous to look at. And then this apparition spoke to me.
Fair sir.
Who?
Fair sir, will ye joust?
Will I which?
Will ye try a passage of arms?
Will I what?
For land or lady or knightly honor?
What are you giving me? Get along back to your circus before I report you.
Sir, thy incivil, discourteous, and unmannerly answer shall receive the chastisement it so richly deserves.
And don't hurry back. As he galloped off, I thought I'd seen the last of him. But wouldn't you know, he suddenly turned around, came a rushing back with his long spear pointed straight at me. I saw he meant business, and so I was up the tree when he arrived.
Varlet, stand and fight.
Now, friend, I don't have any real quarrel with you.
Wilt thou tilt with the lads?
What makes me think he's from a circus?
Then draw thy sword.
He has to be from an asylum.
Cowardly wretch.
And so I'd better humor him. Friend.
I be not friend of thine.
Can't we discuss this reasonably?
Dost thou acknowledge thyself captive of my sword and spear?
Absolutely, and I'll be sure to acknowledge it to your keeper.
But of a surety, thou must this acknowledge to my keeper and thine, his beloved majesty, King Arthur.
How far are we from Bridgeport?
Bridgeport?
Huh?
I wit not the name. Come. We hide toward Camelot.
Camelot? You're kidding.
Of a surety, Varlet, thou art most free with thy tongue, and thou speakest the strangest language.
Camelot. Camelot. I repeated the word over and over. Camelot was probably the name of the asylum from which this lunatic had escaped. Well, I walked along beside his horse, hoping, expecting at any minute to see a familiar sign. And without warning, there stood in front of me a huge castle with flags and banners flying from the towers. I stopped. I was almost petrified with shock because I could see the place was filled with people dressed in the most outlandish costumes. And when they saw me, they were almost struck dumb with fright.
Fear not, gentlefolk. This dark and evil magician can do no further harm. I have vanquished him in terrible combat. Let us now throw him into the dungeon to await the pleasure of the king.
And they did it. Into a damp, dark, foul-smelling cell. And I didn't know what to think. Yes, I did. This could only be a dream. A dream that I had actually been somehow hurled back in time into King Arthur's court, a place I had hardly ever thought about or, to tell the truth, cared very much for. And then the cell door was opened, and in came a slim young fellow in shrimp-colored tights that made him look like a forked carrot. The rest of him was all blue silk and yellow lace. He looked at me, and he said,
I have come for you. I'm a page.
Go along. You ain't more than a paragraph.
Indeed, thou speakest a foreign tongue. What is thy name? From whence dost thou come? And thy raiment! Such outlandish clothes!
Well, friend, do me a service. Do you belong to the asylum, or are...
Fair sir, me seemeth
that'll
that...
That'll do. You're a patient. Oh, if I could just see the head keeper for a minute. Just for a minute.
Head keeper? Oh, but that is a passing strange way to refer to His Majesty.
Clarence!
I am called Amias Le Poulet.
Well, I'll call you Clarence for short. You look like a good-hearted fella.
Yes, 'tis true. And it shall be my undoing. For I was born in an unlucky year.
Oh, there's no such thing as an unlucky year.
Oh, indeed there is. 13 is most unfortunate, and I was born in 513. Wherefore, it is well known.
Oh, wait. Clarence. Hold. Stop. Say it again, and say it slow. What year was that?
513.
513. You don't look it. Now, come, my boy. I am a stranger and friendless. Be honest and honorable. Are you in your right mind?
Forsooth.
Never mind that. Either I've become a lunatic or something just as awful has happened. Now, tell me, honest and true,
mm-hmm.
Where am I?
In King Arthur's court, and it please you.
And it please me. Oh, well, according to your notions, what year is it now?
538, 19th day of June.
No, it can't be. Do you mean to tell me that I'll never see my friends again? Never again?
Perhaps the divine will shall permit thee to.
Well, how? They won't be born for 1,300 years.
Please, good sir, be of merry countenance.
Oh, merry countenance. Do you realize... Wait, Clarence. What virtue are we Yankees celebrated for throughout the civilized world?
Mayhap I have not heard.
Thrift, Clarence. Thrift.
Hmm.
Now, your true Yankee never throws anything away, because you can never tell when it'll come in handy. I happened to read one time that the only total eclipse of the sun during the first half of the 6th century occurred on June 21st, 538 A.D. at exactly 3 minutes after noon.
Eclipse? Good, sir.
Yes, sir, Clarence. Eclipse.
Eclipse. Is it peradventure something good to
now,
eat?
Now, ask me how I intend to use that seemingly unimportant, insignificant, no-account, irrelevant little fact. Ask me.
If it please you, sir.
Mm-hmm. You say this is the 19th of June, 538? Well, Clarence, I say it's the 19th of June, 1879.
What magic dost thou speak, sir?
In either case, The day after tomorrow has to be the 21st. No eclipse is scheduled at all in 1879. Therefore, if we do have one, it's no dream, Clarence. It's no dream.
Come, sir. It is the signal that the dinner is done at the round table, and my master and thine, Sir Kay, desires to show thee before the king in the court.
Sir Kay?
Yes, sir.
And what plans does Brother Kay have for me?
Oh, sir, jest not. No humble monk is he. Sir Kay is foster brother to our liege King Arthur himself. He will have thee kept here till thy friends ransom thee.
Clarence, none of my friends have been born yet.
Oh, sir, speak not such madness.
All right, let's go. Get the exhibition over with. And what if I am among lunatics? I'm smart enough to become boss of the asylum.
Boss? Ah, is that thy name? Sir Boss!
King Arthur's court. How do I describe it? An immense place filled with loud contrasts, a babble of sound, a rainbow of color. The place was a madhouse, and at the center, the round table. And around it sat a great company of men dressed in splendid hues. Well, finally the king raised his hand, and it must have been a signal for silence.
Sir Kay, my good brother.
Yes, your majesty.
Is this the sorcerer?
It is even true, my liege.
Yes, it must be true. Who but a sorcerer would wear such outlandish clothing?
This suit costs $15. Second hand.
The suit is one of enchantment.
Who's that?
That's Merlin, sir.
Merlin?
Merlin, the mighty magician whom all men fear.
The suit is one of enchantment. I behold in him a creature of the devil.
A creature of the devil?
Your majesty, I see the devil emanate from his body. Burn him.
Well, then, if it must be done...
It must be done, your majesty.
Then let it be done day after tomorrow, the 21st day of the month, at high noon.
This is not the usual manner. They do not kill. They hold for ransom.
Well, Clarence, don't worry about it.
Well, you say I'm not to worry, but they burn thee at the stake high noon the day after tomorrow.
No, Clarence. They won't be able to swing it.
Swing?
No, you see, I won't be here.
Well, I wit not what thou sayest, Sir Boss. Where shalt thou be?
In Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh, is that the place of magic and enchantment where Sir Kay captured thee?
Oh, it's a place of magic and enchantment, I guess. In some ways.
But dost thou intend to return there?
Oh, I don't have to return. I never left.
Sir Boss, my poor wits cannot understand.
Don't worry about me, Clarence. I'm still there. All this is only a dream.
And I read on in the stranger's ancient manuscript, where he says he was carried off to a dark and narrow cell in a damp and filthy dungeon, with some scant remnants for dinner, some moldy straw for a bed, and no end of rats for company. And we must leave him there until it is time to return with the second act in just a few moments.
You can have great taste, lots of great taste and taste with Ludens. They're medicated cough drops with great taste in every box. Wild cherry, sweet and savory, menthol cool and flavory. Honey, the way you wish with lemon or licorice. Oh, you can have great taste, lots of great taste and taste with Ludens.
Ludens, the medicated cough drops that don't taste medicated. They taste great. Use only as directed.
The Yankee, a two-fisted foreman in a Connecticut arms factory, picked a fight with the wrong party one day. When he recovered consciousness, he found himself in a strange place, peopled by folk who claimed to be members of King Arthur's court. Indeed, because of his odd 19th century clothes and manner, he has been judged a sorcerer and has been condemned to the stake. The usual fate of such people in those times.
Oh, what a dream. What an astonishing dream. Well, I've waked just in time from being hanged or burned or drowned or something of that sort. Now what I think I'll do is nap again till the factory whistle blows and then go down to the plant and have it out with Brother Hercules.
I give you good morning, Sir Boss.
What? You still here? Go along with the rest of the dream. Come on, scatter.
Oh, thou art indeed most merry, Sir Boss. Thou canst laugh in the face of dire peril.
All right. Let the dream go on. Now, I'm in no hurry.
Sir Boss, what dream?
What dream? Why, the dream that I'm in right now. The dream that I'm in King Arthur's court, a person who never existed. And the dream that I'm talking to you, who are nothing but a work of my imagination.
Oh, indeed. And is it a dream that thou art to be burned tomorrow noon? Hmm? Answer me that.
Clarence, I need you.
Aye, Sir Boss?
Clarence, the only friend I have. Don't fail me. Help me devise some way to escape this jail.
Escape?
Yes, escape.
Oh, do but hear thyself, Sir Boss. Escape? The corridors are filled with men at arms.
No doubt. But how many? Huh? Not too many, I hope.
A full score. One may not hope to escape. Besides, there be other reasons. Weightier reasons.
Other reasons? What are they?
Well, tis said...
Huh?
Merlin, in his malice, has woven a spell about this dungeon.
A spell?
And there bides not the man in this kingdom desperate enough to cross its lines with you. Oh, now, God pity me, I've told it. And you, Sir Boss.
Yes?
Be kind to me. Be merciful to a poor boy who means thee well, for shouldst thou betray me, I'm lost. Sir Boss. Sir Boss, please. Please.
Merlin. Merlin has wrought a spell, Merlin, forsooth. Oh, I never. Merlin, that cheap old humbug.
Sir
that
Boss.
That maundering old fool. Bosh. Oh. Pure bosh. The silliest bosh in the world.
Beware, beware, these are dreadful words.
Of all the childish, idiotic, chuckle-headed, chicken-livered superstitions I ever... Do you know why I laugh?
No, but for our blessed lady's sake, do it no more.
Well, I'll tell you why I laughed. I laugh because I'm a magician myself.
Thou? Thou?
That's absolute sooth, Clarence.
Thou? A magician?
I've known Merlin 700 years.
700?
Don't interrupt. He's died and come alive again 13 times, and he always travels under a new name. Smith, Jones, Jackson, Robinson, Peters, Haskins, Merlin. Always has himself a brand new alias. I knew him in Egypt 300 years ago.
300?
In India 500 years ago. And he's always blathering around in my way every place. He makes me tired. He don't amount to shucks as a magician. Knows some of the old common tricks, I grant you, but he's never gotten beyond the rudiments and never will.
But, sir,
he's
Boss...
well enough for the provinces. One-night stands and all that sort of thing, you know. But, dear me, he oughtn't to set up as an expert.
But Merlin...
Anyway, not where there's a real artist. Clarence, I'm going to remain your friend right along... And in return, you must be mine. I want you to do me a favor.
Aye? If it be in my power.
Get word to the king that I'm a magician myself. And the supreme grand high yuckamuck. And the head of the tribe at that. Tell him that I'm just going about quietly arranging a little calamity here that'll make the fur fly in these parts if Merlin's project is carried out and any harm comes to me. Will you do me that little favor, Clarence?
Oh, Sir Boss, please, I'm frightened.
Now, Clarence.
Promise me, poor sinner that I am, poor unworthy sinner, that thou shalt always be my friend, Sir Boss.
Sure.
And thou shalt never turn against me.
Never.
Never cast any of thine awful enchantments against me.
Absolutely.
And thou wilt always protect me.
Always.
Well, then, I hasten to do thy bidding.
Well, I could see how things work in this asylum. People simply take you at your word. So I was feeling good for a while. And then it occurred to me, when this boy calms down, he'll wonder why a great magician like me should have to beg a nobody like him for help. And he'll see that I'm a humbug. But then I reasoned, these lunatics can't really think. So I felt better. But then I got frightened again. I had sent the lad to scare his betters with a threat. Suppose they called my bluff. What could I do? Should have thought about my calamity first. Well, maybe the threat itself will be enough. Maybe. Clarence?
Sir Boss?
Well, Clarence, speak. Tell me, give me the verdict.
I hasted the message to our liege, the king.
Yes,
and
yes, yes.
Straight away, he had me led into his presence. He was frightened, even to the marrow. And straight away, he said,
I give the order for the instant enlargement of, what name is this mighty enchanter, lad?
Sir Boss.
Sir Boss. Rescue him at once from the vile dungeon. Clothe him in silks and furs. Lodge him as befits one so great. And let us pray that he will forgive us our foolishness.
Yes, Your Majesty. Your leave to speak.
You have our leave, Merlin.
This threat, this calamity, of what does it consist?
I know not. Lad, has Sir Boss described its awful nature?
No, sire.
And wherefore, lad, hath he not named it?
Well, mayhap, Merlin, it is too awful.
And mayhap, it does not exist.
It does not exist?
He hath not named his brave calamity. Verily, it is because he cannot.
But, Merlin, it may well be.
It may well be foolish and idle vapor.
But do we dare provoke one of such great magic powers, Merlin?
Let him prove his brave words.
If thou sayest so, Merlin. Lad!
Your Majesty?
Return to, Sir Boss, and in all courtesy, prevail upon him to consider all the factors in this perplexed case, and name the calamity, also the nature of it, and the time of its coming.
For sellout, I could have had a sellout if not for Merlin.
Oh, Sir Boss, delay not. To delay now were to double and treble the perils that already encompass thee about. Oh, please, be thou wise.
Be wise.
Name the calamity.
Is that all? Just name the calamity?
Oh, yes, Sir Boss. Oh, yes.
Name the calamity.
Yes. For one of thy mighty powers, a calamity should be but the work of a moment.
Well, you just don't pull a calamity out of thin air, Clarence. Now, if I could get out of here and collect some materials, some wires, some gunpowder, some...
Sir Boss, to delay is fatal. Thou hast but one more day. Thou shalt die tomorrow, the 21st day of June, 538.
Now, how's that going to look on my tombstone, Clarence? Born 1850, died 538. 538.
Sir Boss, does something occur to thee?
How long have I been shut up here?
Ye were enclosed here when yesterday had been well spent. It is 9 of the morning now.
Well, then I've slept well, sure enough. 9 in the morning, you say? And this is the 20th?
Yes.
And I'm to be burned at the stake tomorrow?
Yes, at high noon.
The 21st. My boy, We're saved.
Saved? Oh, Sir Boss, I never doubted
you. And you know what the instrument of salvation will be. The eclipse.
Oh, the thing that thou didst speak of before.
Clarence, it seems I recall that Columbus or Cortez or one of those people used it as a trump card against some savages. Do you follow all this?
No, Sir Boss.
Mm-hmm. Why don't I play that trick myself?
Sir Boss, if thou canst arrange for a calamity...
Then why not? Wouldn't be plagiarism, because I'd be getting it in nearly 1,000 years ahead of those parties.
Sir Boss, life hangs upon it. Dost thou have a calamity?
Now just tell me once again, tomorrow is the 21st day of June, and this is the year 538.
It is true, Sir Boss.
Well, very well, Clarence. You shall go to the king, and I shall tell you what to say.
I await thy words.
You shall say to the king that at the noon hour tomorrow, I will smother the whole world in the dead blackness of night. I will blot out the sun and it shall never shine again. The fruits of the earth shall rot for lack of light and warmth, and the peoples of the earth shall famish and die to the last man. Go, tell this to the king.
And when the threat was made, when the sought-after calamity was described, as the stranger wrote in the faded parchment document, poor Clarence turned pale and collapsed with fright, and the Connecticut Yankee had to carry the boy out of the cell and hand him over to the guards. Well, now I must hand you over to some folk who have some words of wisdom for you, and then we shall all return here for the third act.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. To touch the heights you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
You seem to be in a hurry, sir.
Yes, I am.
You are in a hurry.
Oh, yes.
Well, no doubt you're rushing down to buy a Buick Electra because you know that Electra has the kind of ride and comfort Buick's famous for.
That's right.
And because you know it's America's second largest selling full-size luxury car.
You got it. You got
so
it.
So you're hurrying because you want to get there before the Electras are all gone.
That's very good. How did you know I was going to buy a Buick Electra?
Well, it was on the shopping list you dropped back there, you see. Dozen eggs, quart of milk, Buick Electra.
Son of a gun, I forgot the pistachio nuts.
That's not on the list.
Well, I forgot them anyhow.
On the wings of the wind, how it's gonna be, your spirit's free. Someday you'll own, someday you'll own. Sooner or later, you'll own
General's. General Tire doesn't claim its tire experts have all the answers, but they can tell you just about everything you want to know about tires. And that's important with so many new kinds of tires coming out, and so many different claims about those tires. The General Tire Specialist is trained to analyze what tire fits your driving habits, your car, your budget. And the General Tire Specialist can handle your service needs. He's one of the reasons, one of the best reasons why, sooner or later, you'll own General's. Check your yellow pages for the General Tire headquarters nearest you.
Sooner or later, you'll own General's. Sooner or later, you'll own General's.
Writing in the current issue of TV Guide magazine, former CIA director John McCone explains why America needs the agency and puts television's coverage of its activities into historical perspective. Don't miss Why We Need the CIA. It's important reading for informed Americans. In the same issue, New York Times dance and drama critic Clive Barnes claims that television is the best thing that has ever happened to dance. His views on how dance has become American culture's biggest growth industry make interesting reading. This week, TV Guide profiles television's best-known dropout, Fonzie. Henry Winkler plays the Fonz as if he's known him all his life, which is ironic because Winkler is a Yale graduate. Happy Days Likeable Hood, the subject of TV Guide's cover story. TV Guide, America's biggest selling magazine, on sale everywhere.
Is Mr. Mark Twain's misplaced Connecticut Yankee? Is he actually in King Arthur's court? There's only one way to find out. Wait and see if there's an eclipse. The eclipse, as you probably know by now, shall perform a double duty. It will set the date beyond all shadow of a doubt, and it will also save our hero's life.
Clarence? Did you deliver my message?
Oh, yes, sir, boss.
And?
Oh, we're struck dumb with fear and dread.
Let this be a lesson to you. Never lose hope, do you hear?
I hear, sir, boss.
Even when it's darkest.
It is even so.
Now, tomorrow. Tomorrow, I could have submitted meekly, given way to fear and terror. But I thought my way out of a tight place instead. And tomorrow noon, they'll conduct me to that stake, but I won't be burned on it.
No, sir, boss.
Tomorrow noon, I shall become the most powerful man in the kingdom. I can't wait for tomorrow. And I'll even tell you something else, Clarence. We may not have to wait for tomorrow.
True, sir, boss.
Because,
true.
You see, the calamity that I told you to describe to these people...
Do not say those dread words again.
I'm sure everyone's terrified. Isn't that true, Clarence?
Oh, verily, sir, boss.
Well, if I know human nature, they'll come here to see me, to try to compromise. And Clarence, listen, even as I mention it, it's the compromise on its way. Listen, they're coming. And if it's a good compromise, I'll accept. But if it isn't, I mean to stand my ground and play my hand for all it's worth. Sir Kay, and to what do I owe the honor of this visit?
The stake is ready. Come.
The what?
The stake.
Oh, but there's been some mistake. The execution is set for tomorrow.
The order has been changed and set forward a day.
But today I... No. It has to be tomorrow. It has to be.
Come. It is almost noon. Hasty.
Lost. I was lost. There was no help for me now. I was done for good. I was dazed. I was stupefied. I had no command over myself. The soldiers took hold of me and pulled me along with them out of the cell and along the maze of corridors and finally into the fierce glare of daylight in the upper world. And as we stepped into the vast enclosed courtyard of the castle, I received a shock. The first thing I could see was the stake.
We see before us one who has threatened to destroy the sun and thus end for all time all life on this earth. I say he speaks falsely. I say he is an impostor.
Merlin, speak thou more gently. Mayhap he does plan something magical.
There is no need to placate this false magician's hour. Soon we shall see if he can save himself.
I scarcely heard Merlin's gloating voice. I knew now. I was a man without hope, and with each passing moment, the realization that I was about to die crept inch by inch through my veins and turned me cold.
Sir Boss! Sir Boss!
Clarence, what are you doing here?
I am thy servant, sir, boss. It is meet that I serve thee to the end, but there shall be no end.
There shall be no end, you say?
We know thou hast prepared a calamity.
I had prepared a calamity, Clarence.
Has aught gone amiss, sir, boss?
They changed the day on me. The calamity was set for tomorrow, not for today.
I know, and 'twas through me that the change was wrought.
Clarence! What are you telling me?
When I spoke thy words to them, when I revealed the calamity in store, how mighty was the terror it did engender. Then also, I saw that I could save the sun.
Save the sun, Clarence?
It would not be necessary to destroy the sun.
But Clarence?
Yes, sir, boss. thou canst very well destroy the sun and return to thy far-off realm. But all here would be dead.
That was the idea.
Yes, and so I pretended unto this one and that one, the king, Sir Kay, Merlin, Sir Lancelot, that thy power against the sun could not reach its full until tomorrow.
Clarence,
so if
Clarence,
any would save the sun and save the world, thou must be slain today, while thy enchantments are but in the making and lack their full potency.
Maybe I should have explained that...
It was but a foolish lie, but you should have seen them seize it and swallow it in the frenzy of their fright, as if it were a salvation from heaven. And all the while, I was laughing in my sleeve to see them so cheaply deceived. See how happy the matter is spread?
Happy? For whom?
Well, for all of us. Consider, thou wilt not need to do our son a real hurt. Make but a little darkness.
A little darkness.
Now, only the littlest little darkness, and cease with that.
Sure.
When they see that first shadow fall, they will go mad with fear. They'll set thee free and make thee great. Have thy triumph, good Sir Boss. But I implore thee, remember my supplication, and do the blessed son no hurt. For my sake, and I am thy true friend.
I can promise you this, that the son shall suffer no hurt from me, ever. I guess when we're done in more by our friends than by our enemies. Tomorrow I could have worked a miracle. Today, I can only be fuel for a fire. Poor Clarence. What could I say to him? How could I explain it? I wanted to frighten the king and Merlin and the court, and I did. And I also frightened Clarence as well. I should have thought of that. All Clarence really wanted to do was to save the sun. He actually thought I would have to destroy it to prove my point. Well, it should be a lesson to me. But, unfortunately, I won't be able to learn from it. How do I get out of this? If it's a dream, I don't seem to be waking up. And here are the soldiers piling up rows of very flammable-looking wooden faggots all around me, on my ankles, my knees, my body. And I hear the voice of a monk droning something in Latin. And now comes a man. His face is masked, the executioner. He carries a blazing torch. He kneels down at my feet. He's ready to apply the torch. And it's no dream.
Ye have threatened us with destruction.
Answer him, Sir Boss. Remove the smirk from his evil countenance.
Thou hast threatened our very font of life, the blessed sun itself. Well, show us thy powers.
Merlin, do not force
him. Your Majesty, the man is a liar. He has no powers at all. He has lied.
Now, Sir Boss, now. Make them all quake and tremble.
Poor Clarence.
Poor Clarence. What sayest thou? Why poor Clarence?
Because,
Sir Boss.
Because.
Sir Boss, look.
Oh, the sun.
Look, everyone. The sun!
The sun!
Thou hast begun thy magic! See the black about the sun!
The eclipse! It can't be!
Sir Boss, spare the sun!
Apply the torch! I am Merlin!
I forbid it! I am the king!
Then I shall apply it myself! I am Merlin! I fear no one!
Stand back, old man, before thou encounterest the wrath of Sir Boss! Even now, he destroys the sun!
Now, those are but random clouds. Hand me the torch!
It's the eclipse!
Executioner, hand me the torch!
I say no! Stay where you are! If any man moves, even before I give him leave, I will blast him with thunder. I will consume him with lightning. Even the king. Now, as for you, John W. Merlin, sit down. Sit down, or you're a dead man. That's better.
Sir Boss, be merciful.
I will think it over, Your Majesty.
Say no further into this perilous matter, lest disaster follow. It was reported to us that thy full powers could not attain their strength until tomorrow.
You think these are my full powers? I'm feeling very weak today.
Name any terms, fair sir, even to half of my kingdom. Oh, but stop. Oh, stop this gathering darkness.
I should like to, your majesty. Believe me, I should like to.
Thou shouldst like to?
But once begun, these calamities are difficult to untrack. It's best not to start them.
We understand full well, but each moment it grows more dark. And see, the people are struck dumb with fear.
As they should be.
How long, oh, how long shall thy anger last?
Oh, your majesty, Sir Boss, never remains wrathful too long.
I implore thee, Sir Boss.
I shall let this darkness grow deeper for a little while longer in order to serve as a lesson.
Oh, we have learned our lesson.
Have you? Then let all be silent while I gather my powers in order to reverse this terrible darkness and save our glorious son. Clarence, what day is this?
The 21st.
The 21st? Mm-hmm. Hang it. You said it was the 20th.
Oh, by thy favor, Sir Boss, numbers flow through my head as water through a sieve.
Well, then, if it's the 21st, this is the 6th century, and this is King Arthur's court, and I might as well make the most of it. Oh, King, I have reflected. Whether I blot out the sun for good shall rest with you. These are my terms. You shall remain king over all your dominions. You shall appoint me your perpetual minister and executive.
Oh, yes. Oh,
pay
verily,
me,
yes.
Pay me 1% of such actual increase of revenue over and above its present amount as I shall succeed in creating for the state.
Anything thou wilt demand.
And if I can't live on that, I shan't ask anybody to give me a hand. Is it satisfactory?
Anything. Now, please, good Sir Boss, restore the sun.
Very well. First, you must untie my hands that I may use them in this business.
Away with his bonds! Set him free! Do him homage. He is the king's right hand. His seat is on the highest step of the throne. And now, good sir, sweep away this creeping night. Bring us light again. And let us bless thee.
I would say that you have all had just enough. Let all stand. Let all look toward the heavens. And now I declare, let the enchantment dissolve and pass harmlessly away.
Oh, the sun.
Look, the silver rim of the sun emerges.
The sun returneth.
I, the boss, have so commanded.
All hail the boss!
Hail the boss!
And so he became the boss. And to a primitive country, he brought the blessings of soap and toothpaste and gunpowder and books and railroads and telephones. And how did it work out? Well, this is only the exciting beginning of the story. Our purpose is to get you to go to the book itself and enjoy Mark Twain's glorious spoof on, well, when Mark Twain spoofs, he spoofs just about everything. But before you run to your library or bookstore, wait a few moments for me to return.
America's big, beautiful travel value is available again. Greyhound's All-American AmeriPass. 7 days unlimited travel for only $76. 7 consecutive days of travel everywhere Greyhound goes in America, Canada too. Go where you want, when you want. Be a real free spirit. Leave when you like, any day, every day of the week. Only Greyhound serves 48 states. You don't pay for your All-American Ameripass until you're all set to go. And like Greyhound's three other Ameripasses, you'll enjoy special discounts on hotels, meals, sightseeing, and other good things. So get going with a Greyhound All-American Ameripass. 7 days unlimited travel for only $76. It's a great way to get in touch with family and friends for less money, because Greyhound's in touch with more of America.
What's for Dinner? ShopRite is featuring Holly Farms whole grade A frying chickens, just 45 cents a pound. Split or quartered, 53 cents a pound. Fill your freezer for lots of tasty chicken dishes. And don't miss ShopRite's Cookie Carnival. Save on all your favorites for snacks, desserts, and lunches. ShopRite chocolate chip, oatmeal, butter cookies, or vanilla wafers. 8-ounce packages, 3 for $1. ShopRite sugar, iced spice, fudge, or pecan cookies. 14-ounce package, 39 cents. There's a lot more at ShopRite. So stop in soon at your nearest ShopRite store.
She loves her family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, Ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
Newco's gone and put them all together. Everything a margarine should be.
Check it out. Newco's really high in country good taste, but it's not high in price. It's low in saturated fats, and of course, Newco has no cholesterol.
Taste, price, and yes, no cholesterol, yeah.
Newco, that's a margarine for me.
Nobody, not me, not you, but
nobody, not me, not you.
There's nobody we know. Skip Skippy.
Nobody skips Skippy peanut butter, because Skippy doesn't skimp. Every single peanut in fresh-tasting, easy-spreading Skippy is U.S. grade number one, and you can't fake number one. Nobody skips Skippy.
Nobody but nobody but nobody but nobody skips Skippy.
A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. All we could hope to do in the limited time allotted us was get him there. You, of course, should follow his progress. And in this bicentennial year, what could be a happier celebration than several hours with the most American of all writers, Samuel L. Clemens, or, as he would have it, Mark Twain. Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Robert Dryden, Russell Horton, and Arnold Moss. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and the Greyhound Ameripass.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Preceding program furnished by CBS Radio. News next with John Scott.
This is Barry Farber. Join us immediately following the 8 o'clock news right here over WOR New York, the talk of New York.
U.S. officials express condolences to China over the death of Premier Zhou Enlai. Secretary Kissinger meets with Israeli foreign minister but fails to meet common position on Middle East. SEC investigating possible security law violations in the sale of some New York City bonds and notes. It's 22 degrees in cloudy mid-Manhattan. The man says clearing, windy, and very cold tonight, the low around 10. Partly sunny, windy, and very cold tomorrow, the high in the mid-20s. This is John Scott with the 8 o'clock edition of the news. President Ford, Secretary of State Kissinger, and other U.S. officials have expressed their condolences to the People's Republic of China following the death today of Premier Zhou Enlai. The 78-year-old leader died of cancer in Peking following a long illness. President Ford said Zhou will be remembered as a remarkable leader, and Kissinger called him a very considerable man, a great leader. Kissinger said he regrets deeply the death of the Chinese leader who helped form today's relations between Washington and Peking. U.S. officials in Washington say Zhou's death is not expected to affect efforts to improve relations with China. They say the man expected to take Zhou's place, Vice Premier Cao Ping, is considered a strong supporter of increased contacts with the United States. Ping has been handling the day-to-day affairs in Peking since Zhou became ill in 1972. Former President Richard Nixon said of the more than 100 heads of government he met, none surpassed Zhou in keen intellect, philosophical breadth, and the experienced wisdom which makes a great leader. When the former president visited China in 1972, Zhou gave a toast saying the general trend of the world is definitely toward light and not darkness. And today, Mr. Nixon said Zhou's legacy will be that he helped to end the darkness. The White House says no plans have been made yet on sending a representative to Zhou's funeral, since Peking hasn't said when the service will be held or the type of ceremony. But News Secretary Ron Nesson said it's unlikely Mr. Ford will attend the funeral. Secretary of State Kissinger met again in Washington today with Israeli Foreign Minister Yigal Alon, but the two apparently again failed to reach a common position on how to deal with possible attempts to modify UN resolutions on the Middle East at a Security Council debate next week. After today's session, Kissinger told reporters he would take Alon's views very seriously and that the Israeli position will carry considerable weight in American thinking during the UN debate. But Kissinger refused to promise to veto any resolution that would be introduced as negotiable the question of a Palestinian state in the Middle East. At least 2,000 hospital employees have been laid off in Southern California as a result of a doctor's slowdown. A check today of the protest over soaring malpractice insurance rates shows surgery is the hardest hit area. 97 private and community hospitals in Southern California are limiting services because of the slowdown. The Securities and Exchange Commission says it's investigating possible security law violations in connection with sales of New York City notes and bonds. The SEC stresses, however, that just because an investigation is underway, this doesn't mean that any laws have been broken. The probe appears to stem at least in part from charges of massive fraud involving information given investors when New York City securities were sold to the public. Last year, New York, in the midst of a fiscal crisis and possible default, had to reorganize its finances. That included imposing a moratorium, forcing holders of more than $1.5 billion in city bonds to postpone their right to redeem the bonds when the securities came due. After three postponements, the nation's most expensive subway system, Washington's Metro Rail, is now scheduled to open March 27th, 4 months later than originally planned. Actually, only the first leg, serving five stations in the District of Columbia, will open then. Eventually, the Metro Rail system will run 100 miles and serve not only the nation's capital, but suburbs in Maryland and Virginia as well. The total cost is estimated at more than $4.5 billion. The WOR News Time, it's 4 minutes past eight. This program note, Electra by Richard Strauss, is featured on the Saturday afternoon's Metropolitan Opera broadcast here over WOR Radio at 2 o'clock. Back to the news, the name of New York's Governor Hugh Carey became involved in court proceedings in Manhattan today as the state's Democratic chairman sought to avoid being questioned before a grand jury. Special Prosecutor Maurice Najjari was quoted at a court hearing as saying he would be inclined to go easier on State Democratic Chairman Patrick Cunningham if the latter would give him the goods on the governor. Said Cunningham's lawyer, Gregory Perrin, in relating the alleged Najjari offer, "I was shocked. I said Cunningham knows nothing about the governor." Perrin quoted Najjari as saying in a meeting with him last year that in return for the goods on the governor, the special prosecutor would be more amenable toward Cunningham. As to whether Najjari could have been joking, Perrin said, "I don't know, but I know that prosecutors do this sort of things to involve others." Perrin made his statements in arguing before State Supreme Court Justice John Murtaugh for dismissal of a subpoena calling for Cunningham's appearance before a special grand jury at Najjari's request. Murtaugh reserved decision on the matter. The meeting was said to have taken place last December 30th.
New York City's efforts to find a solution to problems stemming from the inability to attract the middle and upper income tenants for the sprawling high-rise Manhattan Plaza development on West 42nd Street have run into sharp criticism from the chairman of the Broadway Association, Seymour Durst. Housing and Development Administrator Roger Starr has recommended that a particular category of low-income tenants be admitted to the new facility between 9th and 10th Avenues, but Realtor Durst takes a dim view of the city official's idea as completely contrary to the concept of Manhattan Plaza.
He has put out feelers for something called modified Section 8, where they would try to provide occupancy for actors from the Times Square area and for some health institutions. And this is a very good idea, but if it is low-income organizations all over the city would insist on their legal right to go into it, and there's no way that this modified plan could work out if low-income is occupancy is available to it. That's what it will become, and it will defeat its own purpose. And it is such a large project, a jumbo size, that was intended to affect the whole Midtown area.